Energy grids are foundational to modern civilization.
Do you have a piece of advice for anybody who's listening to this or might be considering joining the energy workforce? What's your career advice for our listeners?
One of the core foundational pieces of the planning process is load forecasting. The more automation you can build into that process, the better.
Can you talk to me a little bit about the use of artificial intelligence in doing something like scenario-based planning?
I don't want to give away too many secrets, but we do use a lot of AI. And not just for, you know, developing new software, but we use it, you know, in the office too.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to Power Perspectives. I'm Kinsey Grant Baker. If the only things we can count on in life are death, taxes, and uncertainty, how are utility leaders supposed to plan for the future these days? Load forecasting is a critical element of building the infrastructure and setting the goals the energy industry needs to achieve the clean, reliable, affordable future we all want. But increasingly, forecasting load of any kind is like hitting a moving target. Demand is shifting, both in its very nature and in the raw numbers power pros are dealing with. Prices are erratic, making any future modeling feel more uncertain than we're accustomed to. The risk of underbuilding or overbuilding is looming over pretty much any conversation about the energy future. So what are utility leaders to do? Listen to today's conversation, of course. We are about to go deep on why single scenario forecasting is no longer enough, how uncertainty has become the defining variable of grid planning, and what utilities can do to prepare for multiple potential futures all at once. Thanks to our partners at Integral Analytics, who made this episode possible. Stick around to hear more about their work in just a bit. Now, today's guest, Darren Kinney, is the SVP of Business Development at Integral Analytics. He's a power systems and project engineering expert, giving him a singular perspective on load forecasting and how it's shifting. Darren, welcome to Power Perspectives. How are you today?
Thanks, Kinsey. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well as well. Thank you for asking. Yeah, we're going to have a fun conversation. You know, this is a juicy topic, lots to unpack. I'm excited to do it with you.
Great, me too. I'm excited to be able to share some ideas with you.
Darren, I want to start by learning a little bit more about the work that you're doing, how you got into the load forecasting space. Do you mind telling me a little bit more about your background in energy, data centers, and how combining those two kind of got you where you are today?
Sure, yeah, I can go over that real quick. I am a power systems engineer by training and education. I've worked at both investor-owned and municipal utilities as a power system engineer, specifically and mostly in distribution planning, 15-plus years in that space, both rural and urban settings, seeing, you know, the entire gamut on, you know, challenges that face the electric grid infrastructure planning process through both lenses, all lenses really. And, you know, one of the core foundational pieces of the planning process is load forecasting. Yeah. And, you know, traditionally it's been more of a less probabilistic, fewer scenarios, you know, a more defined load growth that you can count on. You know, it's a legacy system. The electric system is a legacy system. You know, in the past, planners could count on 2-3% growth system wide year to year. And it's different now. And that's where Integral Analytics comes in.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I want to talk about how it's different specifically. You know, you mentioned there used to be fewer scenarios. We might have had more predictable load growth at one point that probably feels like a distant past to a lot of the people listening to the show now, because it just has changed so quickly. So let's talk about this change in load forecasting. And I think the best way to do it is to sort of take it step by step. So let's start with, you know, the end of what we could call predictable growth, the shift toward more scenario-based planning, and then how utilities can put all of this into practice in their businesses. So let's start with that first one, the end of predictable growth that you were kind of hinting at just now. Used to be pretty straightforward, but then came electrification, but then came data centers, but then came, you know, a whole new set of rules for load growth and planning for the future. And a lot of that is really rooted in uncertainty. So can you tell me why the modern kind of load that we're talking about today when we're doing predictive load forecasting has become or felt so unpredictable or challenging? What about it, you know, at its core makes it so difficult to predict?
Well, I got into this business, you know, probably at the tail end of the traditional utility planning paradigm where you could expect, you know, some 2-4% growth per year across the system and plan accordingly. When I first got into this business, you know, there was a lot of talk about, and there still is, and we've seen impact from, you know, all these different DERs. DER in my mind is anything that's connected to the system that can store or supply energy, or I guess even some loads can be considered a DER, distributed energy resource. So, you know, that was the big fear at first, all these different end uses with no historic data to call upon to compute, analyze, you know, come up with a good forecast. So, you know, in the beginning days of this more volatile load and you know, planning for this more volatile load, I would see, you know, the reaction was more of a try to bookend, you know, business as usual with the sky is falling. Yeah. And then, you know, maybe take an average between those two scenarios, so to speak. And as the years progressed, we had, you know, huge economic changes, challenges during the first housing crash. And that, you know, that curtailed load growth in a lot of places. I lost everywhere, really. And I think that's when people really started to get serious about, you know, analyzing the what-if scenarios under different challenging situations. Economics, changes in end-use behaviors, end-use technologies, all of these new things coming. It was, you know, really a perfect storm, really, when you think about it. So electrification, greenhouse gas emissions, all of this stuff coming in at once and really getting piled up on top of the, I would say, the distribution planners more than anyone. When it comes down to it, it's their necks they're putting on the line, or they're the ones with the most skin in the game, because you see all of this stuff happening in the distribution system. Of course, the impacts can get aggregated up to the transmission system, and you know, they eventually wind up in, you know, IRP planning, the IRP groups, the different utilities. You got to supply the energy and whatnot, but really, it's the distribution planners that are on the front lines of having to deal with all of this.
No, I think that's a wonderful way to introduce the challenges of this. You know, the challenges of modern load forecasting is really what we're after today. And you made a point about trying to sort of split the difference between business as usual and the sky is falling, which are two very different versions of reality. So I'd love to hear your perspective on, you know, the risk that often falls on the distribution planners of either underbuilding or overbuilding for our energy systems. Can you kind of explain or characterize what the risk of each of those outcomes might be, whether it is underbuilding, thinking maybe it's business as usual, or overbuilding, thinking maybe the sky is falling, and then you end up wrong?
You know, there are risks to over and underbuilding, especially to, you know, the planning departments at a utility. But not every group inside the utility has the same objective. So there are risks to overestimating and underestimating, you know, energy to the, you know, to the group that purchases power, or to the group that sets rates. So, you know, typically within the utility, those different groups don't always have the same objectives, but they do want to try to tell the same story. So, I mean, that's yet another layer of complexity that comes into the load forecasting world. You know, if we want to focus mostly on distribution planning and the risks of underbuilding, is that the utility's not prepared to bring on new big loads like data centers. And, you know, if there is, you know, a potential data center customer that's shopping around for the best rates and the easiest integration into the system, if a utility doesn't have adequate infrastructure, they can't host it. So that's a risk of underestimating or underplanning or underbuilding the system. You also have challenges with integrating renewables. I've heard that there's a misconception in a lot of places, a lot of spaces out there, that DER, you know, specifically solar PV, PV solar, and battery storage are, you know, in opposition to wires. So it's, you know, non-wires alternatives or wires. But, you know, quite frankly, a stout system that's been built well can accommodate more DER. So they are not mutually exclusive. And I think that conversation has changed in recent years. That there's some, you know, as the distribution planning has gotten more recognition as, you know, an important part of this conversation. I mean, if you look at the capital budgets and most investor-owned utilities, maybe all of them, you know, it's the distribution system that gets the bulk of the capital budget. Maybe not the bulk, but the greatest share. So it's really the gorilla in the room. So having a good stout distribution system is a positive in you know, many, you know, many respects. You've got the infrastructure to, you know, if you're talking about an investor-owned utility, those infrastructures go into the rate case and are capitalized, and you know, you get a rate of return on that, and then that makes the shareholders happy. And then you've also got the stout system built to accommodate all of these new end uses and all of this uncertainty that's coming in. On the flip side of that, if you're overestimating and overbuilding, you wind up with stranded capacity or, you know, unused capacity or unused system benefits for who knows how long. And then there's, you know, risks. I think one of the, you know, the big risks there is perception of the customers who are, you know, paying high utility bills, and they're asking questions about why all this got built. Didn't you see that? Why is your load forecast so poor? Why did you build all this if it's never coming? And so, I mean, reconciling those two risks and the objectives within the utility is not an easy problem. And it takes a lot of work, and repeating it and being able to adjust it and rejigger your scenarios based on all kinds of variables, mostly on the end use side, really, really requires a lot of work. And the more automation you can build into that process, the better. The more scenarios you can analyze, the more what ifs, and then you can better define what I like to call, you know, your risk spectrum. And you can't do it with one scenario. You need 2, 3, 4 to really get the spread. And then that's when you can really start doing some good planning. When you have that spread, and you can turn that spread into dollars. Yeah, we don't need to dance around that. We don't need to be, you know, too polite. It's all about the money, usually, and safety. Safety first, and then affordability.
Yeah, I think that this is a really great introduction to what we could perceive as a response to a lot of that uncertainty, which is what you mentioned, a scenario-based planning. So you mentioned trying to kind of understand that spectrum, to understand the different scenarios that you could weave into a forecast or to, you know, the art or science of load forecasting. Can you tell me a little bit more specifically about how that feels uniquely different or differentiated from what had been the norm of load forecasting? You know, characterize what feels new or different about scenario-based planning.
Sure. I mean, we can focus specifically on something like EV adoption. In the past, you didn't have it. you looked at your system peaks and drew a straight line and said, okay, we're going to see this kind of growth from now until the end of time. We can start planning for that. But now you've got to consider incentivizing off-peak charging, and how does that impact the system peak? How does that impact local peaks, you know, at the feeder level? I'm not sure how familiar our listeners will be with feeder terminology, but basically, you know, the substation and lower level, you might see an impact, you know, regarding EV in areas that are more likely to adopt it due to all kinds of different factors. We consider those factors in our load forecasts. You've got things like, you know, proximity to chargers, roads. Is your neighbor bought an EV already? You're more likely to buy one if you see your neighbor driving around in one. Those types of things. So the impact of an electric vehicle can be, a vehicle adoption can be very, very localized in ways that you hadn't thought of before until you actually look at the landscape and and analyze the ground truth against the electric infrastructure network. So if you have a high penetration of EVs and you've got off-peak charging incentivized to those folks, then it may have such and such forecast with, you know, aggregate impacts at the peak level that require maybe some, you know, reconductor or a substation up rebuild, new transformers inside the substation or something like that. But maybe you can incentivize some other type of demand side program, energy efficiency or demand response or some other thing that can help shift the load around even more. So analyzing that, those hourly impacts under different end use assumptions and what ifs, that requires a lot of time. It requires a lot of computation, a lot of analysis. And that always equates to, you know, basically, I mean, it can lead to a paralysis by analysis paralysis, or it can just lead to excessive consulting hours or excessive, it requires a lot of work, and that requires a lot of money, capital. So again, as much as you can automate that as much as possible, it's not always possible. Is it always, you know, in the benefit of the utility and ultimately the, you know, the customers who pay their electric bills?
You mentioned that a lot of this requires pulling data, information, insights, analysis from disparate parts of a very complex and widespread power system, from usage to generation to, you know, the entire spectrum, right? How do you think that, you know, the advent of either, you know, more insightful or more sophisticated data, qualitative, quantitative, has helped to improve scenario-based planning? And if, you know, if it has at all, and if it has, what would you say are some of the core tools for people who are in charge of forecasting and planning to keep in mind when they're thinking about how to weave a web of data and different pictures and different analysis in their jobs and in their tasks?
That's a good question. We could talk about that for hours too. But it's our philosophy that geography and geographic features are the best predictor of human behavior as it relates to electrical end uses. A lot can be gleaned from looking at maps and features in maps and mapping other data sources and analyzing them geospatially. That's our philosophy. And the other philosophy that I think if we're pushed into a corner that we, from our experience, is that the past performance has become much less useful in predicting future performance. And the only way to get a good spread of scenarios is to look at geographic features and make assumptions about endpoint behaviors, customer behaviors, human behaviors, based on, you know, other technological forecasts and what if scenarios under economics and those types of things. So that's the huge challenge, modeling all the different end uses, aggregating them, delivering them to the electric infrastructure, assigning them to, you know, the network, aggregating all of those results, and then geospatially reporting on those results is the biggest challenge.
You know, I'm curious to hear your perspective, Darren, on the AI of all of this, right? When we're talking about a lot of the challenges of load forecasting in our modern power reality, it's often because of these, you know, AI boom means more data centers, means more complicated load to forecast. But I'm curious if AI is also a tool in forecasting. Can you talk to me a little bit about the use of artificial intelligence in doing something like scenario-based planning?
Well, we've always used, you know, AI, you know, the machine learning algorithms been around for a long time. If, you know, there's, I think Microsoft has their Azure AI studio, or, you know, anybody can go in and build a neural network model and do some analysis. And we've always done, you know, a lot of that. But I think if you're after more like some of how the LLMs and stuff have impacted us, it's allowed us to take the entirety of human knowledge that already exists on a lot of this and distill it into what questions we should be asking. And that's how we use LLMs, I guess, as a consultant, really, to help us curate the kinds of questions we should be asking to do better forecasting and planning under scenarios. And then, you know, you have to provide a lot of context to these models because, you know, without it, they just kind of free, you know, float around all of these different vector spaces without any focus on something that I would consider useful. So giving the, I guess a lot of people call that training the model, but building a context, you know, a model with context that's focused on the type of, you know, very specific knowledge base that we work with is something that we do. And we leverage the LLM's ability to basically curate the existing knowledge and how to give us ideas and how we could implement new algorithms and analysis. I'm treading on, you know, thin ice here. I'm trying not to expose too much intellectual property. Of course, we're, you know, in the business of load forecasting and don't want to give away too many secrets, but we do use a lot of AI and not just for, you know, developing new software, but we use it, you know, in the office too. I mean, like a lot of people are doing now, we're using it to clean up our email inbox. We use it to help write marketing documents and, you know, things like that. So I think it's improved our operational efficiency in the office, I think, mostly. I think the jury might be still out on that, but yeah. So we use it in our core technology. We use it. I think our developers use some of the GitHub tools and the things that are coming out now to check for errors and that type of stuff. But it's always been a part of our core technology, you know, form of machine learning algorithms.
I appreciate you spilling a little bit of the beans on some of how this works. You know, I think it's helpful to get that context on the role of technology and what you and the team at Integral Analytics are doing. Now, as we're talking about how this kind of comes to fruition in the real sense, when we're talking about the actual act of planning of forecasting, I would love to get some insight on putting it into practice for our utility leaders who are listening to this. So for those utility leaders and the, you know, policymakers, key stakeholders, anybody really involved in planning the build out of the grid of the future, can you give them a piece of advice to maybe add to their playbooks or their strategies for using these scenario-based frameworks to guide investment and planning? What would you tell the utility listeners who are tuned in today?
That's a good question, and it's a sticky one. I want to dance around it without making anybody too uncomfortable. But I would say that don't get too hung up on the details. Of course, the details are important, but, you know, really, really ask yourself, if you're especially in a leadership position at the utility, what are the objectives that we're trying to accomplish here? Yeah, I understand you got a utility commission. This might be breathing down your neck, but, you know, it's been my experience working with friends who work at utility commissions that they often don't have as much. They don't know what the objectives are either, really. So don't get too hung up on the details. Let's come up with some reasonable scenarios that we think that might impact the system. And let's get, you know, two or three scenarios published under reasonable assumptions, and let's plan against those with another two or three scenarios. You know, we could gold plate the system, or we could throw some DER at it, or, you know, there are lots of solutions. And to remain creative, I guess keep the thought in the back of your mind that we're going to get through this.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. A little optimism never hurt, right?
Yeah. So yeah. It's been my experience that, you know, it's the paralysis analysis paralysis problem. And that can bog down a lot of groups for a long time. And don't fall prey to belief in big data too much. Yeah, big data is cool and it can do a lot, but you know, there's a lot of false precision out there and you need to get comfortable with this risk spectrum. There's going to be a spread. And if you can, act, you know, when it's all said and done, provide, you know, your work to a reasonable body of people that say, okay, yeah, I see what you did here. And it, your response was reasonable given what you were able to analyze and the data you were given.
I think it certainly does. You know, do the best with the hand that you're dealt and do your best to kind of figure it out with the tools at your disposal. And you talked to about honestly asking yourself about objectives if you are in the role of somebody making these big and certainly impactful decisions that I personally am not jealous of the people who are tasked with that. A lot of the core objectives for the people listening to this who are at utilities, many of them really, really revolve around three keywords: affordability, reliability, resilience of the power grid. How can scenario-based planning really help to further those as the core objectives that everybody is really after? Does this make a difference, or you know, can you kind of walk me through what that looks like?
Well, yeah, sure. That's a good question. And it's our philosophy that a good load model is necessary to do all of this work that you just described. I mean, because when it comes down to it, it's the performance of the system under, you know, the lens of those different objectives that's being analyzed and is scrutinized and planned for and capital budgets being applied to. So to do all of this, you do need a really good load model under different scenarios. So you want to model the system under minimum load conditions to see how PV and battery are going to impact. You want to model the system under heavy loading to see how it affects the system under operational emergencies when you've got to move things around. Is it possible to move that load around? What kind of load is on? You know, is on the system at that time? Is it something that we could do without for an hour? Or, you know, those types of things. How important is it that we keep this energized? Of course, everybody's the most important customer, but you know, when it comes to safety and reliability and serving the customer, some are probably more important than others. Yeah, from, you know, through the lens of operational and safety concerns. So, you know, you're going to need a really good load model analyze all of that, and that's going to go into your it's coming back to your distribution planners, and they want to know the scenarios. They want to know the minimum loading. They want to know, what does a typical peak day in the middle of summer look like, or a typical peak day in the middle of winter, so they can run the analysis, identify the system exceptions, and generate the plans and ultimately the required capital budget to remedy any exceptions that they're finding.
Absolutely. I think that's a great way to put it. And it's a fitting way to kind of tee up my last question for you here for this part of the conversation. You know, as we're looking to the future of load forecasting, I'm curious if there are, you know, any signs or road markers of success that this more sophisticated effort toward planning is working. You know, is there a way to kind of track wins or know if you're on the right path if you're trying to kind of predict the future?
There are, and that's also another sticky wicket, as they say. Comparing a forecast to an actual system performance, there are a lot of things that need to go into basically normalizing that data. One of the things that goes into a forecast is, you know, weather conditions and other environmental conditions. And often, you know, comparing results to past performance requires a lot of, you know, massaging of the data. Were the conditions that this system was predicted to perform under the same as the conditions that we experienced? So there's that challenge. Now, conversely, there are some other things we can do, maybe not directly forecast related, but comparing, say, something like land use growth. We do a lot of land use growth predictions using machine learning algorithms and other things, AI. So we can compare, you know, in the long run, has this area developed in the way that we originally foresaw? And we can go back and look at things like satellite image analysis and other general trends and loading and other kind of, load shapes, end use load shapes. That's another thing we didn't talk about. Analyzing all that historical load data and teasing customer load shapes out of it. But we can do that, maybe not on an annual basis, but in a general, trend over 5-10 years. Yes, that is something that we could, that we do, and we have some results that we can show. Do the utilities usually publish this stuff? No. There are reasons for that, what I just explained. But, I think that with the way that load growth is changing and the volatility that we see driven by end-use behaviors and all the crazy economics and everything that we're experiencing, it's really the only way to do this work now, in my mind. I econometric, macroeconomic forecasts at, small geographic areas, they don't work. They work for a large region, a country or a state or maybe, an electric service territory. But getting the kind of granularity that you need where it's needed is not possible, in my mind, from my experience.
I think, Darren, too, that this has been a good, good primer for a lot of people who, even if this is your day-to-day job or even if it is not your day-to-day job, a good primer on what this really requires, what sophisticated planning requires from the data standpoint, from the historical references standpoint, from this, spectrum of risk standpoint. All of it has been really, really compelling. So I have learned a ton. Is there anything else that you want to cover? Anything else that we didn't hit on before we go into our lightning round?
Well, I get to, I'm what is it? The forest for the trees. I'm very close to the problem. So sometimes it's good for me to zoom out like this and explain it to maybe folks that haven't had a lot of exposure. I've been working on this stuff for 20 years and there's a lot to it. There's just a ton. There's a lot to it. And we spend a lot of time with our clients working on this stuff. And, we're learning from them. And as our user group grows, so does our knowledge. And, incorporating these best practices that we've been developing in partnerships with our customers, our business customers, has really done a lot to move the ball in this work. It's not easy. It's really, really challenging.
Yeah, I will reiterate, I'm not jealous of the people who have this job, but it certainly is great to hear that, they're not in it alone, that they're a great partner.
I think our boss said that we're the garbage men of the industry. And what he meant by that is that we do the work that nobody else wants to do because it's so difficult.
But someone's got to do it, right?
Someone's got to do it, yeah.
And we're grateful for the people who do. So, Darren, this has been really wonderful. Let's take a second now to do a very quick lightning round. So the purpose of this part of our episode of Power Perspectives is rapid fire. It's going to be just three quick questions. You can give me an answer in a word or a couple words. That would be awesome. So first up, what are some of the ways that you personally have implemented AI into your work life or everyday life? What's your AI use case?
Well, I guess I was saying earlier, back office and, the back office work, just automating some of the, I don't want to say trivial tasks that I have to work on through the day. And then improving my knowledge. An AI search is better than a Google search now.
Yeah. And increasingly they are becoming very, very similar in look, feel, vibe, answer, all that. All right. So our next question here, you could make one change happen for the utility industry. It could really be at any level. You snap your fingers, wave the magic wand, and something is different tomorrow. Is there something that comes to mind that you would pick?
Yeah. And they've heard it before. Break down the silos, the internal silos. And every business has that challenge.
That's a good one. Yeah. I like it. All right. My final question for you here. Do you have a piece of advice for anybody who's listening to this or might be considering joining the energy workforce? What's your career advice for our listeners?
Well, I think that, energy grids are foundational to modern civilization, water, data, other things. But, you know, it is a foundation of modern civilization, and there's a lot of work to be done. And with all of this stuff that we're talking about, all of this new change, there's a lot of exciting work to do. And maybe in the past it wasn't as sexy, but there's a lot of cool stuff that we can do in this space now. And I would encourage young people to seek the industry as, a valid career path. It's exciting, and it's very important, and it needs help. Yeah. And just like a lot of industries, it's lost a lot of knowledge and work to attrition, retirements. There's a lot of opportunity.
Amen. I retweet, upvote all of that. I agree with you. It is certainly a very exciting industry to work in. And I hope that everybody listening to this tells everybody they know the same exact thing. So thank you so much for joining me today, Darren. And, I really just learned a ton. I enjoyed our conversation. Tons of notes I have scribbled in my notepad for future conversations too. So I appreciate you sharing all of your insight with me. And I also want to thank Integral Analytics for, again, making this episode possible. Here's a quick bit about them. Integral Analytics provides utilities with advanced load forecasting and scenario-based planning tools designed to address growing uncertainty from data centers, electrification, and emerging technologies. Their work supports more informed grid planning and long-term system resilience. For more information or to check out their latest white paper on data centers and how to bubble-proof your load forecasting, visit them at integralanalytics.com, and you can head to the show notes for a link as well. Thank you again, Darren, and thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to another episode of Power Perspectives. See you next time.